Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Engaging the Phenomenon. And today we have the honor and the pleasure of having our guest, Enrique Villanueva. So welcome, Enrique.
Thank you, James. Thanks for the invitation. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And so, Enrique, you're an author, a lecturer, a hypnotherapist, and you've had some extraordinary contact experiences. So just for the audience, can you give a brief introduction of yourself?
Okay. Well, I was born in Peru in 1970. My father was a doctor, my mom a nurse. I grew up in this environment of people working with the community, doing service. And around seven, I have a sighting that was important, I think, because the whole city could appreciate this bright light. Even the newspapers the next day were reporting on the thing. And later, through practices of meditation in my teen years, I started to have more and more sightings and more paranormal experiences. At the age of 17, I participate on the Rama group, which is a group of contact in Peru. That group started in 1974 with the work of the brothers Sixto and Charlie Paz Wells. And I became part of the group in 87, 88. And I was having now the experience of contact, not by myself, but with a group. And that was important for me. And I had great friends there and practiced with them for about 2 years. I had different experiences in Rama that went from telepathic exchange, contact, physical encounter with these beings, an invitation to go in the ship, which I rejected, and many other experiences, encounters at different levels, not just the physical, but they create the scenario where you can actually travel. It's not just a mental travel, it's kind of like an astral projection. And after 2 years and seeing that I was stuck with experience and I was in the university, I quit the experience of Rama to dedicate myself to the university. I wanted to be serious about my studies in Peru. And at that point occurred that kind of like an expansion of consciousness happened spontaneously. And that really shifted my perception of reality. I mean, if the experience of contact did its part, this was like the shift, the complete shift of perception. And after that, I couldn't just continue with my life. I quit the university, I traveled and arrived to the United States, and then I stayed here. And I was working with the people that was interested in having similar experiences. So for a while, I was working with people, taking them to the field and experience the contact by themselves. This was not my job. It was something I did on the side because I had a regular job. And eventually became a hypnotherapist here in California. And from time to time, I take groups to the field to have the experience. And the experience has evolved through the years. If I started thinking that the contact was with alien beings, eventually my perception shifted a little bit. And I'm really open to the experience now. In 2020, when we were just beginning the pandemic, we had an experience with Archangel Michael, and that was completely out of our expectation of that.
Yeah.
And 50-something people had the experience with me, and that was amazing. And that was an eye-opener again,
Ken,
we have in contact with. So yeah, I'm really open now, but I'm not that involved as I used to in my 20s and 30s.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's a few things over there I do want to go over from beginning what you said. So for people listening, can you just go over a little bit about Rama? Because I've discussed Rama here before and the Rama contact group and a little bit of the history, mm-hmm. but from somebody who's directly participated with Mission Rama, can you give a little background on the protocols of Mission Rama, you know, how they went about contact? And if you pretend that I'm coming out with you in the field to do the Mission Rama work, what are we going to do?
Okay. First thing, when you enter Rama, you understand their structure. And they say that there are four stages in the experience of Rama. The first one is the call, what they call the auron. The call is when you are invited through your own experiences to search for the experience of contact. So yeah, I had experiences since I was a kid. So at 17, I got so interested that I couldn't just stop. I went towards them. So that's the call for me. Then the next stage is the experiences, what they call the sendra. In that stage, you had a variety of experiences that goes from the sporadic sighting that you can have in your field experiences, or astral projections, even communication through meditation, telepathic messages that you receive through automatic writing. And you can have also, if you prepare really well, an experience of exchange with them, physical encounter with them, and a very close encounter, I would say. And that happened in the stage of the experiences. Then, if you got really involved in this, and the experience is not just an anecdotal thing for you, then you go for the next stage, which is the lunar stage. It is related to the moment when you take the experiences you have and you try to mature the things you integrate. You try to make sense of what happened, because it's really complex.
Yeah.
And that stage can last for years. I think for me, it lasted for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
And in that stage, I had less experiences, but a lot of meditation. And then you enter the next stage, which is the solar stage, where you spread the word of what you understood, whatever is your understanding of the phenomena. Now you feel this urge to communicate, to share with the people, whatever you have. So I think I follow the four stages like a good student. I did. And even though I was physically in the experience for 2 years in Peru, I continue all the other stages here in the United States. And when you arrive to Rama, they give you this information. They give you the recordings of all the communications that they have in archives. And they gave you a training that is called, the translation is weird, but let's say it's a training manual with 24 different classes that you have.
Yeah.
So you take those classes once a week in the house of one of the members. They assign an instructor, a person that is going to go to give you the class. And you are learning and practicing, learning, practicing. And then in the sixth week, they take you to your first field experience. So you go, in this case was to the desert, Chilca Desert in Peru, and you stay there for the whole weekend, probably from Friday to Sunday night. And in those days, you are going to practice everything you learned in the week before. And normally, you have a lot of paranormal experiences related to the contact. Sightings are the most common, but then there are other experiences, like feeling the presence of the guides, because that's the way they call it, the extraterrestrials, and the feeling that they are getting close to the group, the feeling they are walking around you or they are touching you, that's very common, or the feeling that during meditation they activate somehow your perceptions, your way of seeing beyond the five senses. Those things happen during that training. And so it goes for weeks and weeks until you finish the guide of 24 practices. That's the translation,
roughly. Yeah.
And yeah, when you enter Rama, they told you, yeah, this was received from the aliens, but actually it was inspired in the previous practice of Sixto and Charlie. I think they participated of the GFU, which is an organization for yoga and metaphysical studies in Peru. They were there before Rama.
So that, yeah, that probably had an influence on,
And again, I
read the Sixto Paz-Duel's book, The Invitation, and I had mentioned that he was practicing yoga, mm-hmm. and his father was a ufologist, and he would go to these conferences,
exactly.
and that's, according to Sixto, he met a 32nd degree Freemason mm-hmm. at one of these conferences, and that individual was the Freemason, who was a 32nd degree, was taught a class on telepathy with non-human intelligence. And when Sixto went home, he practiced what the Freemason had taught and about this communication, which I think was the automatic writing. And that began a number of experiences for him. So I think, and again, I don't know for sure, but the Rama mantra and everything seems very Vedic to me. Because I've had
Vedic,
my own
what?
Vedic, like Vedanta, Sanskrit.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have my own experience with yoga, and I guess you can say I'm a practitioner of Kriya Yoga,
mm-hmm.
and what people consider Raja Yoga, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, I guess people would also call Kundalini Yoga, and that involves some of those practices.
Yeah,
and so I found that interesting.
So you feel like the influence of that Freemason was very important. Like he knew something?
Well, the interesting thing is when Sixto practiced what the guy taught, that's when his experience started.
Yeah, I have to tell you something about him. His name was Victor Yáñez.
Victor Yáñez was
a Mason. He was also my uncle. He was
no way! What?
Yeah. And
oh my God!
Victor was a doctor. And he was a really good friend of my dad, who was a doctor also. They were both surgeons. And Victor eventually was part of the Theosophic Society in Peru.
Oh, so my God. Wow.
He knew a lot about metaphysics and stuff.
I'm familiar with the Theosophical Society. I'm familiar with their work. Yeah.
But he was also searching for the truth. I think he was amazed about the experiences of these kids, because at the time Sixto was 18 years old and his brother 18-19, and Victor, I think he was also amazed that after his conference this stuff happened. He had a lot of knowledge of the metaphysical and esoteric stuff, but regarding aliens, he got a question mark. Like my dad, they searched, they went to the deserts, the mountains to search, but they didn't have the experience,
right?
Not the level of Rama,
right?
Just to clarify that part.
That's incredible. I had no idea, because I mean, again, I read that back in 2012, maybe, when I first mm-hmm. heard about Rama, thanks to my good friend and mentor, Dr. Joseph Burks. Mm-hmm. And that's wow, that's incredible. So, is he still around?
No, he died many years ago before my dad. So my dad died in 2004. So Victor must have passed probably 2000 in the beginning.
Is his information available anywhere, like his research or? Did he have books?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. If the Theosophic Society had something on him, probably in Peru, but he didn't publish like internationally. No, not that I know of.
That's amazing to me. That he was like your uncle, and but that's funny because that's kind of how things end up working. You know,
we're all connected somehow. Yeah, I was amazed too when Sixto mentioned that in a conference when I was a teenager. I was like, that's my uncle. I didn't know that he was related to this thing. I knew he was in the Theosophic Society, but I didn't know that he gave that lecture about osmas. And that was the precursor of SETI.
Okay. Like, wow. Yeah. We have to talk that. We're going to talk about that another time, Enrique. Seriously. Yeah,
sure.
That's a whole conversation. And I definitely want to discuss that. But for the sake of this interview, I would like to, for you to talk about some of the experiences you had when you went out early with Mission Rama, and, you know, even maybe before or after in your, you know, some of the important experiences you had in that time period, that brought you here now. So, maybe, you know, experiences that you had with consciousness and also experiences maybe with the intelligence or the entities around that time.
Yeah. Okay. So 1977, I was playing with my friends in the street, kicking a ball probably when we saw a light in the sky. And people were running towards the big avenue. So we thought, what's going on? So curiously, we ran after, and I remember the wall of the grown-ups standing, and we tried to enter between the legs to see what's going on. And on the other side of the avenue, there was this, it's like a little dirt mountain. It's actually the archaeological remains of old pre-Columbian culture there. And on top of that thing, there was a light moving. It was kind of like two plates that you put together. And the thing was moving somehow erratically, slowly, and then like a leaf. It was giving a display of acrobatics and stuff. And we were just fascinated. And I remember the grown-ups saying that that was an OVNI. OVNI is a UFO. And that was the first time I heard OVNI. What is that? And then they were saying the end of the world is coming and stuff like that. The grown-ups were talking about they are coming to invade the planet. They are aliens from another planet. And I was just listening for the first time that those things. And I was not afraid. I was more curious. And thinking that there was something strange and very special about that light. The next day, the newspapers, my father had the newspapers in the table during the breakfast, and he was talking about the sighting. And I told him, I saw it. That thing was flying over our district, and then it went to the other districts, and yeah, the whole Lima saw the sighting. And then they say the thing flew towards the coast to the next country, which is Chile. And there was some other experiences there. So at the time, I realized my father was interested in the phenomena. I knew he was already interested in stuff that was not regular. As a doctor, he didn't talk that much about it, not openly, but with his friends, with his close friends, he talked about aliens and meditation. He was into the studies of the yoga and stuff like that. He actually had a section on his library, his bookshelves, full of metaphysical stuff. So when I was 12, I had an experience where I suddenly appeared in another place. That was my feeling. I'm suddenly somewhere, and what is this? And I was lost in the middle of the street. There was a store. I entered, I was with my pajamas. I asked the person there, nobody looked at me, nobody answered me. And I was like, what is this? Maybe I'm dreaming because I was in my bed just minutes ago. How did I get here? So I was kind of scared. So I went to a garden that was to the side of the street and entered, and I hide behind the bushes like somebody was going to see me, but nobody actually did that. And I started repeating myself, I want to wake up, I want to wake up. And then suddenly I was in my bed. And that experience repeated itself many times until I was like, what is this? I thought it was probably related to the puberty, because they told me that there was going to be changes when I grow up and stuff like that. So I thought, I'm going to ask my dad if this is normal. And he listened to me, and then he told me, no, that actually doesn't have anything to do with puberty. But I had a similar experience when I was doing my residency as a doctor. He explained to me that at the time he was paying rent in some floor he was, and at night he heard somebody knocking at the door. He went down, opened the door, there was no one there, went up to his bed. When he was going to enter the bed, he noticed his body on the bed with his arms crossed, and he thought that he was dead.
Yeah.
He started crying, and he cried for hours until sunrise. And then he was already with my mom. He already had the first kid, my sister. So he was like having a really bad time when he thought, maybe I can actually feel in my body or attach again. So he tried. He's sunning his body and put in the same position. When he stand up, he was already in. So he immediately ran towards the building of psychiatry in the place he did the residency, the medical residency. And he talked to the main doctor there. And for his luck, this guy was 33 Mason.
Oh, wow. Level. Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
The guy told him, the experience you have has nothing to do with schizophrenia or anything like that. What happened is that you are having an astral projection, and many people do the practices for years without getting to have the experience,
yeah,
and added it spontaneously. So I suggest that you study about this. So he invited him to the Masons, and then to the Gnostics, and then to the Rosicrucian order. And he went to many different orders. So that's why he got a big bookshelf about it. And he told me, you can read all those books because I'm not practicing now. So yeah, I started reading about astral projections, and from there about yoga and meditation.
Yeah.
And then I explored many other different things. So by the time I was, I don't know, 17, 19, I thought that I knew everything. Everything in metaphysical. In meditation, I started having these sightings, lights on the sky. Sometimes I feel the call. Like I was meditating in my room and I felt like I have to go up immediately. I went up. It was noon and there was nothing in the sky. And then I tried to feel the same feeling that I was having in my meditation. I closed my eyes and then an explosion of light, and I saw this symbol that was like a triangle cut by a circle. And the symbol was so bright, so vivid, that was not only the form, but the meaning. Because it was not just a shape. It was kind of like a life giving me the information. And he was saying, this is the man of fourth dimension of consciousness, the sun on the earth. To achieve that, you need to balance the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. So I understood that the triangle was actually saying that the balance between physical, mental, and spiritual.
Yeah.
And the circle was our source. The pointy part of the triangle was touching the center of the circle. So from there, the triangle emanates. So we came from source. And here, when we are in the physical plane, we are supposed to balance whatever we are in manifestation in order to become this light spreading being for the rest. And at the time, I was already a few months in Rama.
Yeah.
I'm crazy about knowing about the symbols, because they in Rama received not just automatic writing, but also symbols that they didn't get to understand completely. So I went to the archives of all these writings from the 70s and 80s. I couldn't find my symbols. So I thought I saw it so clearly that it must exist. Eventually, I found the symbol in many traditions around the world. Is the symbol of Ahura Mazda. Ahura Mazda is the symbol of the Ankh in the old
yeah.
Egypt. Is the symbol of Ra. Is the symbol of. It is all over the planet.
I'm very glad that you shared that, actually, because there's a story that's come up relevant in the community of something similar, of of another experiencer who had a similar kind of thing with a symbol. I don't know. Do you have a pen and paper? Can you draw and show the symbol really quick? Is that possible?
I'm going to show you something better. Just give me it's right here. In my last book, which is about consciousness, not about aliens.
Oh, perfect. Okay, perfect. Wow. Is that book in English by any chance?
No, it's in Spanish.
Okay, because I'd love...
The original symbol doesn't have the little man meditating.
Right.
It's just a triangle and a circle.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that.
The circle was complete.
And that's fascinating. That's a powerful experience for sure.
So guiding in Rama, searching for more meanings, not just the experiences of others, but trying to search for my own stuff. And knowing that they didn't know about my symbol, I was trying to get more and more information and meditating more deeply. Eventually, I had what I call a first encounter with those beings. I was trying to do the automatic writing, because my group was a group of kids. We were like between 16 years old and 20 something, and we didn't have the person that was receiving the telepathic communications. And all the groups in Rama normally had one or two of
antennas, right?
Call it antennas, yeah. So my group didn't have one. So I grabbed pen and paper at 11 p.m. one night, and I said, I'm going to try to open my channel. I did it the way I was supposed to. Nothing happened. I tried second night at the same time, at the same place, and I felt the presence of something in the room. I thought it was my father or someone walking, but no. And then I tried for the third night, thinking that if it doesn't happen, then I'm not the antenna. That's it. And I tried again, closing eyes with my pen and paper, and suddenly I felt the presence of someone. I turned around, no one. I closed my eyes. At the moment I closed my eyes, immediately saw in my, how you call it, the screen of my mind.
Mind's eye.
My mind's eye. Yeah. I saw clearly hands approaching from my back like this, getting closer to my neck. Immediately I sensed energy running through my skull very powerfully, so powerful that I could hear the buzzing sound through my ears, like and the third buzzing sound was like an explosion of light. And then I saw this guy standing in the other side of the table, and I was shaking. I was afraid. I wanted to run, because that was completely out of place.
Can you describe what the entity looked like? Just
I'll show you a picture. If you give me a second.
Yeah.
Let me see if I have the. No, I don't have that book in here. Sorry.
Oh, okay. But what book is it in?
It's in the Columbus and the End of Times. I thought I had it here in the bookshelf, but it's not. Well, what I saw, this guy standing in the other side of the table was tall. I would say about 6'2", maybe. And he was very muscular. in a very good shape, like a person that does gymnastics or something like that. And his shoulders were very, like, yeah, a volume. And he wore, in contrast, some kind of tunic, a robe. And the robe really draw his form. And very, very beautiful to the sight. His face had almost a quality, a female quality, but he was a male, evidently right. A male. His eyes were kind of like a Mongol, like a Chinese, but yeah. Mongol. His hair was white and got close to the shoulder, abandoned that to the side. And his expression was very gentle.
Right.
His body was surrounded by a contour of light. And it was not an aura. I've seen auras. That was not an aura. That was something surrounding his body. And I was nervous. So I asked him, are you going to say something? What is going to happen? Are you going to dictate the thing I'm supposed to write? Say something, right? Because my heart was really, really fast. And then from him came this emanation, this field, this energy. I couldn't see it. I just felt that thing coming towards me and embracing me. And immediately my brain translated the feeling I was having into little brother. But before my brain formed the words, I already felt the love of a big brother embracing me.
Yeah.
And it was a real love. It was not a fake thing. That really calmed me down. That was like, and then was like, I don't remember how it flew, but I remember that I could answer the same way because I sense his sensing, I could yeah. sense back. So I immediately realized that telepathic communication is not just sending a thought form, kind of like a structure thing. It was more a feeling. And yeah. the feeling was so complete that you cannot escape the meaning.
Yeah. Yes.
Meaning was there. And I knew there was love. I yeah. knew he was there not to harm me in any way because he was loving me. And I knew that I was getting ready for that experience at the moment. So he told me that, how was the word? It's been so many years. I was at the time, I think, 18. He says something like, okay, I was in the need to come down because you are not the antenna of the group. And you have to go back to your friends and tell them to prepare the same way you did. And we will be more than happy to assist your group and guide you through this experience. And every time you predispose yourself in service for the others, we will be here for you. And that's a rough translation of the feeling.
Right. No, so
it was more a feeling.
Right.
And I was quiet when I felt all these things. I was thinking I had 1,000 questions, but I didn't get not even one. I was so shocked that I couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
He remained there like waiting for me to say something, but because I didn't, he just smiled and all the light, the contour of light that was surrounding him started shining, shining, shining. And then his whole image collapsed in a spot. And then he vanished. And I was still shocked. I couldn't believe it. I thought, what happened? I mean, is that the way it's supposed to happen, the automatic writing? And I went to the group and I told them what happened. And they say, no, that never happened. The people only listen to thoughts in their mind and they write down whatever they are receiving in automatic writing. So no, that was not a common experience, not even in drama, but it happened to me, and I was not going to deny that as an hallucination or something. So I told my group, and most of them disregard what I said. They thought that I was trying to look interesting or something.
Yeah.
But one of my friends, he was away from the group for 2 weeks because of a job-related issue. Victor Benitez was his name. And Victor, he asked me, after everybody laughed and left, he asked me, what did you do? What was it exactly? So I told him, I grabbed paper and pen. I close my eyes and breathe. I feel the feeling of friendship as a field of light. And then I pull it or push it out through my skull out into the sky. And then I open it like a fan in every direction.
Yeah.
And I just send that feeling to the whole cosmos. And then 3 days later, this guy came. That's all.
Yeah.
No big thing. That was all I did. And I repeated day after day after third day when that happened. He says, I'm going to try it. And yeah, Victor was the antenna because he started receiving immediately. He was receiving even in the bus trip. He had to grab a napkin and write right there because he was flowing with the information. So that was the beginning of the big experiences in drama for me.
And do you guys have, and I know for people who may have had these experiences, it's almost secondary, but when you went out with Rama, did you actually have like UFO sightings and experiences?
Oh yeah, for sure. Lots of them. And the common sighting is obviously the light that looks like a bright star crossing the sky. Sometimes crossing each other, sometimes zigzagging.
Yeah.
That's the most common. Sometimes they become another color, red, or they go down in the hill and start shifting lights, different colors. That was also common in Rama. But then one day in 1989.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. So you were there?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But not at the night of the journalist.
Okay.
They didn't allow the whole group,
Rama
group. They were only the old ones, the elder of Rama there. We were the younger, we were putting aside, but we were still working surrounding the area, helping create the field for the experience.
Yeah.
But it was not in the same date of the night of the journalists because Rama invited many journalists. They have the sightings. They took the pictures and everything.
Yeah, and just so people know, I posted a few videos on my channel with that footage because that is, for whatever reason, you know, the UFO intelligence, the beings, they wanted to demonstrate, that they could interact, and that footage. For people watching and listening, I put in a few videos. I made a video called Mission Rama. So it's on that video. And I made a video called Examples of CE5 Footage. And it's in that. And I'll probably include it in another video just because it's pretty profound footage to demonstrate to people that this was a programmed sighting.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Yeah, go on.
No, this happened not in the same date. It was, I don't remember if months after or months before, but it was 1989 that we went there. We were actually a new group in Rama. So we were the youngsters. And then we started receiving these communications. And we showed the communications to the people in the center, the Rama center. And in the beginning, they were skeptical. These are really young kids, they don't know anything. But then they spread the word, and when we go to the desert, there were more than 300 people in the desert waiting for the experience that was announced in our group. What was the experience about? We were going to have an initiation. And in Rama, at the time, there was like a silence of a few years from the guides. So when we arrived to Rama, they told us that for, I don't know how many years, they didn't have any experiences of initiation. So when we arrived and we received this new info, they were like, is it real? Is it not? However, they went to the desert with us. So when we arrived, there were already hundreds of people in the desert. Everybody put their tent and they were getting ready for the experience. I didn't know what was going to happen. But then at night, we were in a huge circle, hundreds of people doing the mantras, the Rama, Amar, Om, different mantras.
Can you do that? Can you do the Rama mantra for us here? Just because it's so wonderful.
Okay, imagine 300 people holding hands, sitting in the desert and doing something like this. Something like that.
Yeah,
it was extreme. The people were like gasping with no air, and they keep going and going. That really puts you into a different state of consciousness, just doing the mantra for a long time and doing it with so many people is really powerful.
Yeah, I've actually experimented with that, with the Om, the Rama and stuff, mm-hmm. over the years with groups, and yeah. it is a powerful technique, I guess, if you want to say. It gets everybody in a cohesive, even a vibrational state.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, thank you for sharing that. Even the second part, when you did it, it cut out for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it was too strong.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so what happened is, as we were doing the mantras, the instructors, the old ones, they ask us to keep our eyes shut. So don't look, just focus on the mantras and your meditation, because the conditions are being prepared for the initiation. And I was curious. I was a kid. I wasn't going to close my eyes. And it was in the middle of the dark of the night, so nobody's going to notice if I open my eyes, right? So I was just looking around, searching in the sky. The night was amazingly clear. You could see all the stars there. And then I noticed something dark moving really fast on top of us. And I was like, what is that? I couldn't actually picture it because it was not static. It was moving really fast. And then I was looking and looking, and suddenly this thing slows down, and it was like a really like a boomerang. A boomerang, a V-shaped thing, and it has lights all over its structure at the bottom. So if it remains static, it was actually camouflaging with the sky and the stars. But surrounding the boomerang, there was kind of like a field that distorted the light of the stars. So when it moves, you could see through the distortion, the light being, how do you call it, reflected, I don't know the term.
It could be reflected, yeah.
So that's why I could see the structure, and it was massive. I say that was like three blocks of houses together. So the shock is that massive structure, how can it hold it without making any sound? Because that's the shock for me. This is not making a sound, and it's so massive, moving like this and going around. And I was just looking what was gonna happen. Then the thing vanished again. And then I saw the movement to the back. I followed with my eyes. And then I couldn't see the structure, but I saw a beam of light coming down very fast, like somebody turned on a laser beam from the sky. The thing went down, and I thought the thing was going to explode in the floor because of the speed that was getting. But no, immediately when it touched the ground, a circle of white light was ignited lighting on the floor. And on top of the beam vanishes, and I could see forming kind of like a little cloud, a cloudy thing in there. And then one of the instructors says, the Sendra is ready. The Sendra is, they call it...
Portal?
Yeah, portal, you could say. And sometimes you enter that and you can go to some other place. That's in the experience of many people in Rama. I think Sixto has give some testimonies on that in his books. But it's not always like a portal, like going to somewhere else. If you have the right perception, maybe you can see the traveling to the thing. But actually, when you enter, you are still in the desert, but there is a field. In my perception, the field was like a cloud that was deposited itself on the circle of white light.
So, yeah, some people have explained it as almost like a cloud of light in a circle mm-hmm. or a dome.
And yeah, some people say it's a dome. I didn't see the perfect dome.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures in daylight of the dome really well formed, and that's amazing to see. But at night, I saw it like a cloud. And as I get closer with my friends, the cloud vanished, and even the white light was not there. But I knew that was a place. So I enter, I look up, and I saw a pulsating light on top. There was nothing but just the pulsating light. And then we close our eyes, and I could feel the energy. It was weird. It's like you feel like a little dizzy, a little like nausea sometimes.
Yeah.
And then they ask us to stand in a circle, giving the back to the group with our hands extended. And then these forms of this structure form in our palms, which they call the cesium crystals.
Yeah.
And then you are supposed to integrate those things in your chest, in your heart chakra. They say it's kind of like an extra antenna to amplify your perceptions. And I was ready to get whatever experience they were going to give me. So I was open. I didn't care if it was radioactive or whatever. I was just like waiting. The thing is, I saw and checked that everybody was receiving, and I was still waiting. And close your eyes. And I couldn't close my eyes. It was like, I want to see it. But then I closed it, and I felt like one of the hands was really heavy, the other was not. And then I sensed my fingers shaking. And then the instructor told me, it has formed only one of your hands. So we have to integrate that. And then he put my hands together, and he did it so fast that I felt my heart going like really, really fast with a tachycardia, how you call it? When your heart goes really fast.
Heart palpitation?
Yeah, but very fast and then slow down quickly.
Yeah.
And when I asked later to the instructors, why is it that they gave me only one? They told me that happens to for a confirmation. You already received them, only you didn't know.
Yeah.
So probably I already have this cesium crystals. And well, the cesium is one of the materials that was spread in Russia with the explosion. What year was it? That big nuclear accident.
Oh, Chernobyl?
In Chernobyl, yeah.
I forget what year that was.
That was one of the materials that was spread to the atmosphere, to the land. And they say the life of that thing was like 30 years of contamination or something like that.
At least 50, yeah, some 50 years of half-life or something. Yeah.
But then we were receiving this in a form that was semi-physical, semi-etherical, and it was not supposed to give us any effect of bad radiation or something like that. But some people start reporting that when they travel on airplanes and they pass through the check, they activate the alarm, the thing, even though they were not having any metals on there. And they say that maybe it was something. Maybe it was the cesium crystals. That was some of the experiences we have. And that was the biggest sighting I had in my life. Yeah.
And the initiation, what is, you know, I don't want to be semantical, but the initiation part, was it the crystal part, the cesium crystal part, or the sighting, the encounter itself, or both?
Okay. The three main initiations in Rama are the Sendra Pass, the portal, the doorway, The second is the cesium crystals, the receiving of the crystals. And the third one is called the cosmic name. It's kind of like a mantra, particular personal mantra for you. It's kind of like your energetic signature, maybe.
Yeah.
And when you have it, you use it in your meditation, and it helps you to amplify your perceptions if you really modulate the way it's supposed to be. So, I received later my name, and there are other initiations in Rama. And if you ask Charlie, the brother of Sixto, he's going to tell you about many other initiations, not just those three. So even in Rama, there are some disagreements about what is supposed to happen in the experience or how many experiences we are supposed to have. But then, later they talk about the initiation of the frontal crystal, which is a tiny crystal that you're supposed to integrate in your forehead. But that's another story. Yeah.
And so the Mission Rama practices, I mean, I know you mentioned the 24, but if you were to just summarize very shortly, when you guys went out into the field to do the work, were there like a number of exercises that you always did?
First of all, we were supposed to arrive to the camping site doing fast. You're supposed to fast for many days. You are supposed to try a vegetarian feeding if you try to do it really well. And obviously you practice meditation way before you get into the field. When you are in the field, you are supposed to still fasting, mostly with water and maybe seeds if you feel that you need some support from food. But the more you remain in the fasting, the more you amplify your perceptions.
Maybe and just for clarity on the fasting, what are you allowed to have and how often? Just
I didn't get the question.
Like if you're fasting, you're not eating any food at all, or you're allowed to have like
No, you are allowed to have seeds, water, maybe honey if you bring it with you, but not heavy food, and of course no meats at all.
Yeah,
but if you can keep yourself with water, that's even better.
Okay.
Yeah. When you are in the field, then you practice meditation from the beginning, you do some kind of psychophysical exercises, kind of like yoga. Maybe you practice that for hours, then exercises of breathing exercises a lot. Then you do another moment of mantras. Then you do meditation, group meditation. Then you try to receive the automatic writing with the whole group. Then you prepare for whatever experience they told you in the automatic writing. You prepare the field with mantras always. And what else are we doing in those practices? Well, when we have the sightings together, we can also do some of the practices in order to receive more information. Those are the things.
I know you mentioned before, and I think I read in Sixto's book, but I think I heard you describe it before, something like, I don't know, maybe the translation is self-control or?
Yeah, auto-control, self-control. Is when you take the people out in the dark by themselves to train their emotions. Because we all say that we want to have this meeting with aliens, but actually, when we are by ourselves, we just feel like we're going to die because of the unknown, because of the fear of the unknown we instinctively have. So having those experiences of self-control is really important. In every time we go to the camping sites, we separate the group at some point at night, and we spread them really far away from each other, and they have to stay there for an hour, sometimes 2 hours in meditation. And they are going to have all kinds of experiences. They're going to feel like they are being approached by someone. They're going to see the sights sometimes, and they are supposed to keep quiet. And sometimes the sightings are really, really interesting, and people cannot just keep quiet. Are you seeing this? And everybody's like, yes. So they feel the company of the people through the distance. Another practice we do is the chain of energy. We just hold hands after raising the vibration with the mantras, and then we collect energy, and then we send and spread the energy towards the planet. And that's a very important part of the practice. I'm sorry I forgot mentioning this, because that's what connects us with the field of the planet consciously. And that is gonna make you, it's gonna put you in service of the planet. And if you do that, it's like the planet can recognize you and it's gonna call you at the moments you are needed. It's a very strange experience. And most of the people are called unconsciously. They don't know that they are being called, and they are really helping in some weird situations. And if you are conscious, it's an amazing, amazing experience when that happens.
Okay, so two things here. You explained it a little, but can you briefly walk us through that exercise? And then two, can you explain the what Rama means?
Okay. Well, the chain of energy, you hold hands like this. The right hand points down, the left points up.
And receive and send.
Like this of the other person. And as you hold the hands like this, you can do the mantras together. Rama. Or maybe Om. But we do it for a very long time. Sometimes in the middle of the snow or in the desert or in the forest, whatever you're doing it. And you keep going, sometimes even for hours. And then you feel the energy is so strong that some people feel like they are going to faint. And if you feel like you are going to faint, you have to grab the hands and put them together and you step back because you cannot hold more energy. But if you can continue, then you keep holding it, and then the instructor is going to guide us in the process. Like right now, you're going to see this light beam coming from your forehead and connecting all the foreheads of the people. Then you're going to see this light beam, golden color, coming from your belly button and connecting with all the people. And then you're going to see the connection at the level of the heart. And then you're going to feel the feelings of the love for all humankind and all species in the planet. And then you're going to see that the group starts growing. The whole circle grows until the planet is small in the center of the group. And then you're going to infuse this energy into the planet and engulf and embrace the planet with this love, this feeling. And you're going to send especially to those places in the planet where you see that there is war, violence, hunger, or whatever is happening. And you just give energy until you see the planet shift into whatever you are projecting. And then you go back to the planet. The circle shrinks until we are back there. And that's the work. And we can do it for years without having a paranormal thing beyond that feeling. But when it happens, it's really powerful. And not too many people in Rama had the experience. But when you see it, you notice why it's the experience of contact flowing. It's not just about contact. This is about connection. This is about really igniting the field for the better of the whole. But then Rama means sunlight on earth, or that's the translation of the meaning the guides gave us at some point. Ra means the vibration of the sunlight, like the sun disk in Egypt, I guess, Ra. And Ma is the vibration of the planet, which is related to the mother, to the maternal energy, the Virgin Mary, maybe. And Rama means the connection between earth and heaven.
Yeah, yeah. And thank you for sharing that. So you mentioned something important there. And, you know, a lot of people, they either go into this seeking contact, or they have contact on their own spontaneously, and at some point they notice that, you know, the contact is almost like a catalyst for something greater. And I notice when you talk about that like the consciousness and the inner work, which are very important. So can you clarify a little bit about that, the importance of the inner work, and maybe that it's not the contact happens and it is important, but the contact isn't the whole message or the whole importance of the work.
Yeah. Yeah. For many years, I was a hunter for experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I had the sighting, I want to see the being. If I saw the being, I want to be closer and talk to them. If I talk to them, now I want to go into the ship. If I go to the ship, I want to go into the planet. And that's the escalation of our curiosity that wants to go even beyond and beyond. Whatever is the distance, we can go the distance. But then it happens through the years that you realize that there is something more important. Because if traveling in the ships was important, everybody should have it. But it happens just with a few people in Rama or with other experiences of contact. So that's not the main thing. And in 1995, I had this experience. I was working in San Jose, north of California. And in my work at the time, I was driving a car, kind of like Uber, delivering food, but for the big companies, for Amazon, for Microsoft. And we had to wear this red suit and everything. And it was fun at the time. But then I was working that day, and suddenly I felt my heart going really, really fast, like super fast as I was driving. And I thought, I'm going to have a heart attack right now. I stopped the car. As I stopped the car, I thought, what is this? What's going on? And immediately your mind goes, oh, your grandmother suffered from the heart and your father had high blood pressure. So probably you are inheriting this thing. And I was like, no, I'm healthy, I'm exercising, I'm eating healthy. What is this? I really wanted to know what was going on. So I tried to feel it. And then I realized that there was a field of energy putting pressure on my chest. And my heart was going like super fast. And I realized this is not me. Something else is happening and it's putting pressure. So I immediately said, I want to see it. I want to see what is going on. So I closed my eyes, and immediately I saw like my vision was going through the sky in between the clouds. And in between the clouds, I saw this black thing going like swirl really fast in black. And then the thing stopped in front of me, and I noticed that they were letters. And the letter says accidente aéreo. In Spanish. It was the title of a newspaper in Spanish that says accidente aéreo, which means airplane accident. And then the A from airplane and the A from accident, they detach and they put together. One became red, the other blue. And then I saw the logo of American Airlines. And then I saw the tail of the plane. And then I saw the plane. And then I was inside the plane. And then people, I mean, talking, reading magazines, it was just the plane. And suddenly the plane did a maneuver, very sudden maneuver, and people yelled, somebody in the front asked for something or said something about he was seeing. And people tried to look, and then the thing just collapsed in seconds. It was like, I don't know, a big explosion, like the whole thing collapsed. And then I was back in the car. At the time, they called me with a radio because there were no cell phones. It was 1995. Yeah. Cell phones at the time were like bricks, huge things. Yeah. Only the CEOs had them. And I remember on the radio, they were calling me, like, go back to the base. And I was like, yeah, give me a few minutes. And then I knew that was happening. And I was thinking, like, who am I supposed to call? What am I supposed to do? So I started just praying because I couldn't do anything else, praying and sending energy of love and protection to those people. And I went to the base and they sent me to some other deliveries, but I was the whole rest of the time just praying and praying. At night, I arrived home, I turned immediately the news, and a flight from American Airlines had crashed in a mountain in Colombia. It was December 1995, and I was devastated. I was like, I didn't ask for perceptions. I didn't ask for this thing. I mean, it's a torture to see something that you cannot change.
Yeah.
So I remember I went to my room crying, and as I went to my bed, I remember that immediately I felt the energy again. And I was like, how is this possible? It already ends. The people are already dead. How am I feeling this? Why? And then I sense like the thing still continues. So I was pulled out of my body and I was flying towards the mountains in Colombia. When I arrived, I saw these discs that were stationary, like golden discs, floating on top of the thing. And at the bottom, in the mountain, the debris of the airplane still burning. The rescuers were not able to arrive because it was already night, and they were waiting for the morning to send the people for the rescue. But they thought because of the angle of the crash, everybody was dead. And I descend there, and immediately this being received me, and I recognized her. She was Anitak. Anitak is one of the guides in Rama. And why did I know that she was Anitak? I don't know. I just recognized her. I arrived and I said, Anitak. And she told me, the names are not important today. And she explained to me that we were called to help the people that had gone through the experience in the airplane. And I said, how help them? It already happened and you guys had the technology. Why didn't you stop the thing?
Yeah.
And she told me that sometimes they do. They create like a field or a time capsule to avoid the crashing. They use their technology, and sometimes the planes arrive out of time to the landing place, or with all the clocks out of time.
Yeah.
So they have done that before, but she told me sometimes we cannot interfere with the field of that collective consciousness, that group. In a way, they were creating the scenario of the catastrophe. And she told me, in that case, we cannot interfere. We create the field, the capsule of time, so your own consciousness, the consciousness of humankind, can work on the issue. That's why we call you, or call all the people that was arriving with me. So she says, look at them. And there were like bubbles all over the place. And inside every bubble, there was a person living the nightmare of the moment of the crashing. They were repeating that over and over and over. If you enter the thing, you saw it like in a movie that was repeating itself. And I asked her, what are we supposed to do? And she told me, look. And she entered the bowel of one of these guys who was reading a magazine. And he was crashing and then going back and crashing and then going back. So she grabbed him by the shoulders and he told him, it is over. It's okay. Come out. And then he get out. And it's like he was holding the scenario. I don't know how to explain this. It's like, yeah, they create the capsule of time, but every consciousness use that energy to keep themselves in that loop.
Yeah.
So when she gets him out of the loop, he suddenly realizes, I'm dead. And then she says, do you feel dead? And he says, no. Then help us. And then we start working with the rest. So that's like we rescue every single one by one. And when we finish, I realized that there were still six people alive, six. And I was like, this is not enough. like, what is going to happen? And she told me, two of them are going to pass during the night. Only four are going to survive, but they are going to be rescued later. But for now, we need to take all these people that die to the light. So we hold hands like in the chain of energy. And we saw this massive beam of light coming down. And then all the people start going in. Sorry.
It's all right. I really appreciate you sharing that. It's a very intimate and powerful and personal experience.
Yeah. And they just went into the light. And then she told me that we have been doing that without noticing, that many people are called and most of them are not conscious of this work. And this is part of the training in contact. And that's one of the jobs we can do unconsciously. Because we opened that door to contact, now we can be used to work with the collective consciousness. And that's what happened at that night. And I realized that many of the people that was helping at that night were not conscious. They were sleeping, like me, in yeah. different parts of the planet. And they were not going to remember what happened the next day. Yeah. And that's okay, too. And I was really thankful for the opportunity to be able to remember and to see that so clearly. And I realized that contact was beyond what I thought. And they are really helping, but they have a limitation. The limitation is a frontier with our will as human. The human collective is actually creating this habit, yeah. this chaotic, and they can only interfere until we
participate.
We allow them to participate in that. So that's why it's so important to do these practices. And of course, I realize that it's not just about meeting them physically or having those extraordinary experiences. It's about helping. So I started working more and more on my own development as a human. I started working as a therapist, and now I focus on anxiety disorders, people that are having this chronic fear. And my channel in YouTube grew so fast with that topic that now is like 250,000 people in Spanish. And it's really satisfying because I have dozens of thousands of testimonies of people healing from anxiety disorders and depression. And I feel that maybe that is the job. That is a real job in content. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I know exactly what you mean. But you in the past few years, I don't know how many you've done, but you've done a few kind of trainings at Mount Shasta.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still doing those?
Yeah, reluctantly, because sometimes I feel like I have more job in here, but it's just right. once a year. So whenever the friends from the CFI community call me, I try to be there at least once a year. So I've been doing it with the C5 groups since 2016, I think. Before that, I was doing it with the Hispanic community, with the Ramas. But then the C5ers got interested. They called me and I started having experiences with them. They received some initiations. They have good experiences in Shasta, Mount Shasta. And then as I told you in the beginning, the experience has been shifting. And now angels are present in the whole process.
And I would love to, you know, to what extent that you're comfortable sharing. You mm-hmm. said there was an experience with Archangel Michael.
Yeah.
And people, I think, may be familiar Archangel Michael goes out under other names too. I believe people have considered that Metatron or it goes under different names actually. But the can you describe a little bit about that? I'd love to hear about that.
Well, what happened is in 2019 when the pandemic started in December, I thought this is awful. I don't know what is going to happen. I sensed in the beginning of the year 2020 that this was going to spread all over the planet. I mean, I felt the impulse to do stuff that I didn't do before. And when the pandemic came out and was official in March 15, 2020, which was my birthday also, mm-hmm. and which is the International Day of Contact also. And I was like, wow, it's amazing that just in this day, everything started. And I thought, okay, I have to be secluded for the security of the people also, not interacting with anybody. And when in August or July came about, in the month of July, everybody was like, Enrique, we have to go to the mountain. And I was, no, not this year. And they keep insisting, please. And no, I'm not going. And they said, if you don't go, we go. We're going to be a small group, probably 10 people. And I said, okay, if it's a small group, okay, I'll go. Yeah, I felt the pressure. So I went. When I arrived, it was like 50 people, like 55 people. And honestly, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't receive anything beyond we were going to have the pandemic and it was going to be big. And I was scared. I had some friends that died. The hospitals were already full. It was awful all over. And I remember the Friday, I had a feeling that the guides or the presence of this intelligence was surrounding us. But I couldn't see them, just felt during my meditation. And the people, the C5ers, select this day because all over the planet was going to happen this, the doorway, the lion's gate, they call it, I think, is August 8th. And they said that in that specific moment, some alignment in Orion's belt occurred with the planet. And I don't know, I didn't understand the astronomical thing, but they say a doorway is open and something happened. So that's why they decided it was going to be on that date, August 8th. So Saturday was August 8th. And at noon, all the groups around the planet were supposed to work. So since the morning, we were doing the exercises, then the meditation, then we did a work that I really like. It's kind of like a catharsis for the group. We talk to each other about the issues we have in our lives and we try to make sense of it. And then we forgive the people involved, but we have someone listening to us and then we exchange the information and people get like a release. So that was before 12 noon. And like 10 minutes before noon, my friend Luis told me, Enrique, it's going to be the time. So we put everybody in circle. It was noon, midday. And we were in this big circle, 55 people. And I was directing them in the process, close your eyes, breathe this way, just open your mind and blah, blah, blah. I didn't even know about the thing, the gate. I was lost about it. I was just gonna let myself flow with whatever I was guided to do. And as I was directing the people, suddenly crows were coming from all over the mountain. I mean, not one or 10, 50 or more. They were coming, flying, and standing on the branches in the trees around us. And the loud sounds that they made were interrupting. I mean, it was something. And I was getting scared because immediately my mind, the images of corpses and the crows eating their eyes and stuff like that, we relate crows with those things. So I thought it's the pandemic or something like that. Maybe we are being attacked by something. So I immediately asked the mountain. In Peru, we believe the mountains are like guardians. The mountains are called Apus in Peru. And the Apu has an intelligence. If you relate to that, you can be guided. And Shasta is an Apu in California. So I asked Mount Shasta, what is going on? What is this? Are we being attacked or something? And immediately I received the answer. And she told me the crows, right? The crows are the shadow of the hierarchy that is coming down now. And when she said that, I saw in my mind's eye a beam of light going down very violently. Like, it was like the whole sky fell on top of us. And I look at it, and because it was like a cylinder of light, this guy came out, and he was massive. He was made of light. I mean, I've seen what we call aliens, but this is not an alien. This is a huge being, like twice or maybe a little bit more than a human size, made of light. His whole being, his armor or whatever he was wearing, was really shiny. From his back, lights coming out. So I understand what they think is wings.
But this light.
Light. He was made of light, every part of him. And his whole presence was his message. I mean, it was like I understood things immediately when I saw him. It's he didn't even say, I am Michael. He was Michael and I knew it.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. But he was not just Michael. He was Mikael Ilu. And he was Apollo, and he was many other things through our history.
Yeah.
And like in many other times during our history, Michael came in the moments of pestilence or pandemics, and his presence is like saying, this is going to end because I'm here.
Yeah.
His whole name means like, he's like, who is like God. And he is like an emanation, if not the same. I mean, it's the same, but I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
And he was there like marking the moment, like, this is going to end. You shouldn't be afraid because I'm here. Then I had a previous experience with a client that lost a baby. She actually made an abortion. So at the moment, I didn't know how to help her, but I felt that the help was coming from a spiritual experience, not just put her into hypnotic trance. So I grabbed her hand and hold her and just told her that I was going to go with her somewhere. And I felt like I was traveling to this place that looked like cliffs, and there was an angel there. In my mind, I saw an angel, and the angel grabbed a sword and stopped me, like, you are not going to pass. And I told him, I need to rescue someone. And he told me, if you pass, it's 6 months of your physical life. And I said, that's fine, take it. Because I don't know how am I going to live, so yeah. I don't care. And he took 6 months, however he did, I don't know, but he put the sword down. And then I went into the cliff. And in the cliff, there was dark tar, hot tar going down. And in the middle of those things, the babies, and it was awful to see. I knew it was kind of like a symbolic of the place in her mind where she thinks this baby is. But I approached the thing, and then the baby came towards me, and I grabbed it and I went out. And then we took it to the beam of light, we send it to the light and everything. And she was at peace. So I didn't give much attention to that. But then every time I got sick or something, it immediately came into my mind that I have 6 months left or less than I was supposed to have. At that moment in Shasta, the first thing that Michael did was he grabbed something in his hand and stretched it, and there was a little stone that looked like bluish or greenish, and he gave it to me, and he says, integrate that. And I knew I had to put it in my forehead. And he says, you have your time back. And I was like... And then he says that we shouldn't fear, that this is going to shift the whole thing. And he said that, I asked him, initiations. I received yesterday that there were going to be initiations for the group. And he told me now, because I thought it was going to be an initiation on the Days of Waterfall there in Shasta. And I thought I had to take the whole group there. And he told me, no, now. And his voice was not like, make me a favor. No, he's imposing. He's like very powerful in everything he says. It's an order, but at the same time, you know it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
His whole expression is like that. So I immediately put the whole group extending their arms, and he was spreading this beam of light to everybody. It was not a visible thing, the thing in their hands. It was more something I could sense.
Yeah.
And then I put the hands in the foreheads of everybody that went, and they all received the thing. And then he was like an initiation for the whole group. He directed the next thing. He guided us into the connection with the planet. He asked us to put our faces on the earth, our foreheads, and feel how we can leave the ego behind so we can work as a community, as one. And that we shouldn't be scared of the pandemic because things were going to be shifted from there on. And it was like a potent, how call this thing? It's like an improvement in our DNA. The whole humankind had evolved on the impact of different viruses through our unfolding of the human genome. So this virus is a potentiation upgrade. It's an upgrade on our DNA. It's not that it's good or it's bad. It's just an upgrade. And every time those things happen, it's like we are being assisted anyways. So we don't lose hope or faith. And I realized all those things in that encounter. And there were people that are really psychic in that group, like my friends Carla and her ex-husband, Miguel, also, Michael. He also told me, I saw Archangel Michael was in the center. And then my friend Bahid, in his tradition, I think angels doesn't exist, but he told me, I saw a beam of light and this guy with armor, golden light beam came up, like a giant guy. And everybody was like having their own experience of this thing. Another guy said, I was stopping the airport coming to Shasta, and an unknown guy came to me and gave me this stamp of Archangel Michael. And I don't know why.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Everybody was giving those coincidences and those experiences.
Yeah.
My friend Peter told me, do you remember we were healing before this experience? And I told you that my ex-boyfriend that died left me with this feeling. And he told me his friend was Michael. His name was Michael.
Yeah.
And then everything was like connecting. And people that couldn't see anything, they saw the phenomenon of the crows coming or the little trees that were shaking during the whole experience. I mean, the big trees were standing, but the small ones were like moving around. And for me, that was amazing. I started searching in Rama who else had an experience with Michael.
Yeah.
And it happens that in 2016, my friend Luis Fernando Mostajo, a contactee from Bolivia, traveled through Europe, and he was guided towards an encounter with Archangel Michael in one of the monasteries that he is, he's revered.
Yeah.
In France, I think. And it's amazing that all these monasteries were built in different timelines, in different moments in history, but you can trace a perfect line that is uniting those temples, I think, from Ireland towards Israel, I think. It's a very straight line.
Yeah.
And those temples are always close to the coast. It's really amazing. So Archangel Michael has been with us for a long time and now is entering the experience of contact also. And when I started studying the thing about Archangel Michael, because I was never interested in angels, I realized that he was during pestilence and pandemics in the past.
Yeah.
In 1600 in Mexico, he appeared during one of those moments in Mexico. He appeared to a guy whose name was Diego, and he said there was going to be a water fountain coming from the land, and if you drink from there, you're going to be healed. Then 1,000 years before in Rome, a pope had the vision of Archangel Michael when he was asking for healing for the pandemic they have at the time. And then in some other places in Europe also, when the pandemic was there, Archangel Michael came down. So what happened to us, it was not something new. It's been happening. And for me, it was like an eye-opening that the experience of contact is way more than we think it is. If we think it's just about contacting aliens, no. This is about participating in the awakening of consciousness in the whole universe, I think.
I agree. I think so. You know, Enrique, there's so much more I want to talk to you about. I didn't even get to everything that I wanted to discuss, but we're getting at almost close to 2 hours now. I definitely want to have you back on sometime to talk, because this was extraordinary. And you know, from all the people that have come out of Mission Rama and the contact world, I definitely resonate with you a lot. I really feel connected in that way. So I definitely want to have you back on, maybe even a few times, because again, there's so many things I want to discuss. But for the audience, do you have any kind of parting words for the audience?
Just to let them know that there is no accident that we are here at this time. We all have a role to fulfill in this drama story of our evolution, and that we are being assisted if we open up for the guidance of whatever is in the other side. But make sure, or be sure, that what is on the other side has a good intention. It's not what sometimes we hear. They come for invasion, they come for our blood, they come for genetic mutations or hybridization. I don't think so. I think there is a really good intention behind. And in a way, the best thing we can do is awaken in the middle of the experience and do our best to collaborate with this goodwill that is coming from the other side. Thank you for the invitation, James. And of course, I'm going to be open for whatever call you gave me in the future.
For sure. And I know a lot of your work is it's in Spanish, but you know, for people that want to find you and they want to find your work, how can they reach you? How can they find your work?
In YouTube, probably if they put my name, Enrique Villanueva, they're going to find a lot of videos in Spanish. Lots. I mean, there are two channels. One is kind of like spiritual guidance, And the other is like therapy, a therapeutic channel where I spread the word about how to heal from anxiety disorders.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think are you on social media too? You're on Facebook and anywhere else?
Yeah, in Facebook, they can find me with Enrique Villanueva, CHT. And also in Instagram. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Take care.